Hey, folks, I'm Mark Maron from the WTF podcast, and this episode is brought to you by Kleenex Ultra Soft Tissues, your ally to help tackle your allergy symptoms this season. I love the change of seasons, but nobody loves pollen and all those other things floating in the air that make you sneeze during this nice weather. Kleenex Ultra Soft Tissues are hypoallergenic and allergist approved. So fight back against watery eyes and runny noses without worrying about irritating your skin. For this allergy season, grab Kleenex and face allergies head on.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now, imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. So start getting your best night's sleep in sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. And you can try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee, plus 15% off your first order with code BUTTERY. So head to bollandbranch.com today. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Across the UK, online and on DAB Digital Radio. Women's Football Weekly with Faye Carruthers on TalkSport 2. All the action, excitement and drama from across the entire women's game, including the Women's Super League.
Cleared off the line by Steph Horton.
The UEFA Women's Champions League and the Euro 2021 qualifiers.
Lana Clellan striking from outside the penalty area.
World-beating big match conversation on the station that's raising the game for women's football.
And she scores!
Women's Football Weekly with Faye Carruthers on TalkSport 2.
Welcome to Women's Football Weekly. Football authorities call for action from social media companies following more online racist abuse, this time aimed at Manchester United and England's Lauren James. On the pitch, is the WSL title race wide open again? Shock defeats for Chelsea and United throw this season's script up in the air.
Goes the delivery, and it's gone all the way in! Carly Telford couldn't keep it out. And Brighton lead with 12 and a half minutes left.
So with the door ajar, City overcome Arsenal, climbing closer to the top two.
Kelly. It's a great ball over! What a header that was from Hemp!
Villa's Japanese superstar Mana Iwabuchi continues her blistering start to life in the WSL with a stunner against Spurs.
Right with Iwabuchi, who will try one from distance. What a strike out of nothing. Aston Villa take the lead. It's been all Spurs, but Mana Iwabuchi, the Japanese international and World Cup winner.
All that plus we'll hear from Manchester City and England's Chloe Kelly ahead of the Manchester Derby, as well as all of the results from the Championship. This is Women's Football Weekly, National Radio's only dedicated women's football show.
Women's Football Weekly with Faye Carruthers.
Hi, I'm Leah Williamson from Arsenal Women, and you can follow the WSL on TalkSport 2.
Hello, team. How are you all? Did you enjoy the football this weekend? It was pretty impressive, wasn't it? Exciting stuff, particularly in the Barclays FA WSL. And I've got some great guests to discuss everything with you. Good evening, Bristol City manager Matt Beard. Another point on the board. How are you doing?
I'm good, thank you. How are you?
I'm very well, thanks. How are the headphones going? Do you want to tell everyone where you were just before we came on air?
I was in Asda buying some headphones so you could hear me. They're all right. You know, listen, bargain, £6. I'm happy with them.
Bonus. I'm loving your work. I need to go down there. Molly Hudson, how are you? Have you got some decent headphones?
Yeah, the AirPods are in. I'm ready. Just about thawed out from yesterday.
Wonderful, wonderful stuff. Yeah, you were at Arsenal, weren't you? I mean, listen, I don't envy you. I stayed indoors all day yesterday. Never have I been more grateful not to have a game on a Sunday. Next week, maybe it's going to get worse. Right, listen, we've got to start with a topic that is prevalent and unfortunately getting more and more prevalent, frustrating, infuriating. There's a million and one adjectives I could use for it, to be honest, but... The Football Association has called for swift government action after Manchester United's Lauren James became the latest player to be sent racist abuse on social media. She was targeted just over a week after her brother Rhys, who plays for Chelsea, was as well. A number of male footballers also have been targeted. She marked the abuse that she got on Instagram as boring now and wrote, "Instagram, really need to do something about it, or they'll lose so many individuals on their platform, because that's the only way they'll actually listen. Could even just remove any emojis with racist meanings. Too easy for some kid to press a few emojis in order to try and grab some attention. Too much talk around these days and nothing ever gets done. Usual story. And that is the big problem, isn't it? Because there is a lot of talk and not a lot being done. We'll discuss what is being done shortly, but Talk Sport have spoken to Lauren's father, Nigel, and Nigel has said that Lauren's actually received more vile racist abuse this morning. This is Monday, from the same account, as well as from others as well. He gave us this statement. It's the government and the government alone that can put the legislation in place to deter people from sending racist abuse online. These companies should be fined a percentage of their profits if there are continued abusive messages arising on their platform. Board members of these companies should face negligence charges if abuse continues, while guilty parties should face either automatic youth offender centres, prison for a short period, or fines and a deduction from their salaries. If all of those things were implemented, it will change people's behaviour online, even though it won't stop racism itself in society. Molly Hudson, your reaction to that?
I just think it's overall just so disappointing that we are talking about this again, that nothing has been changed. There seems to be no kind of progress, or if anything, I think last week there was discussion that these emojis don't even reach the threshold for accounts to be removed from Instagram, which obviously is a huge part of the problem. I think Nigel is exactly right there. But, you know, for me, I want to focus on Lauren James. She's a 19-year-old player, hugely talented. We don't even speak to her as national media because the club are really trying to protect her. They know she has a huge career ahead of her. So much talent there. But when you get this kind of abuse, it's straight to your phone. You don't have that protection of Casey Stoney. You don't have the protection of the club. It's coming direct to you, straight to you. And I think that's what can be so damaging about it. And I just think that Lauren has spoken so eloquently, and I hope the social media companies listen and something really gets done, because it does feel as though, as she says, there's a lot of talk, but there seems to be little action.
Yeah, Facebook, which owns Instagram, has said it's working with players, clubs and the football authorities to tackle the issue. They say there's no place for racism on Instagram and we're committed to removing it when we find it, it said. And as you say, that action just has not always been taken. Or if it is eventually taken, it takes a very long time for it to actually be implemented, which I think is the huge source of frustration for many people. Matt, have you had to encounter any of this with any of your players or any kind of abuse online?
Not really with any players. I mean, I've had a bit of stick, obviously, when results don't go your way. But I just find the whole thing embarrassing. I mean, I don't know why they... The statement that Nigel's put out, and I know Lauren's dad really well, I think he's absolutely spot on. And I think they should just shut these companies down, shut down these platforms, you know. That'll soon make them stand up and start doing something about it. I mean, I can't remember any situation or any instance where someone's been prosecuted or it's been dealt with. You know, they might have had an account suspended or something like that, but I've never seen. It's just wrong. It's embarrassing, and I think at some point the government need to stand up. And I agree with your FA statement 100%. They need to stand up and just shut these companies down if need be, and shut these platforms down. And that's what will make them actually take action, I think.
I think the problem, Molly, is that they've become too powerful almost, haven't they?
Yeah, and I think there is an argument. I think Phil Neville actually made this point quite a few months ago now, must have been the last time this sadly reared its ugly head. And he was saying, well, maybe players should just leave social media and then this wouldn't be an issue. And it does make you think, you know, maybe that will happen in the future if these social media companies don't change their policies. And, you know, whether that's down to the government, down to the companies themselves, they need to change, because these athletes aren't going to keep taking this. You know, that they will make action. And if the companies don't do that, they will take it into their own hands and leave these social media platforms. And then ultimately, it's the social media platforms that lose out, because some of the players involved in the men's and the women's game have a huge following and people will want to follow them elsewhere.
The problem is there's always going to be another social media platform, isn't there? There's always going to be somewhere for people to spout hate if they want to. And this is a wider problem. It's a problem in society. Oliver Dowden, the Culture Secretary, says we are going to change the law to make social media companies more accountable for what happens on their platforms. But they can start showing their duty of care to players today by weeding out racist abuse right now. Players must not be abused for doing their jobs. Enough is enough. And again, it's taken the government a very long time to come out and actually do something, and how long is it going to take them to be able to pass a law that these social media companies have to adhere to? Because it feels to me as if this has been a problem for a very long time, and we can't only just now be starting to take action about it because people are shouting. You know, it's absolutely ridiculous, and you know, racist abuse at any level is absolutely abhorrent and should be wiped out completely, but any online abuse should be wiped out as well. The insults that we get here on Women's Football Weekly, and I love you, everybody who listens to this show, whether it's live on a Monday night or whether it's on a podcast, you know, you're always defending women's football. This is a real close community. There are trolls out there who, for some reason whatsoever, just decide that they want to spout their hate towards women's football because it's not something that they like. You know, my nan loves bowls. I'm not a great fan of bowls. I'd never turn round to anybody who plays bowls and tell them that they're rubbish. It's utterly ridiculous. And I think sometimes we have to look at where this hate is coming from. Is there something perhaps we don't know about, you know, the people that are reaching out and saying these things or posting these emojis? What are they thinking? Why are they doing it? Because if we find out the why, we might then be able to try and combat it in a different way. Are they actually racist? Or do they think it's funny? Or do they just want attention? Or is there a mental illness involved in this and they have access to be able to say stuff? And it's so difficult to know that without delving further into it. And that is the responsibility of the social media accounts, I would say. Listen, we're going to talk about this, unfortunately, I think, for a long time to come, which is probably the most frustrating thing about it. It is certainly getting out of hand now, and the quicker restrictions are brought in, the better. Right, let's move on to happier news, shall we? England are going to be playing Northern Ireland, sorry, that is a very big gear change, I'm afraid. England are going to be playing Northern Ireland on the 23rd of February behind closed doors at St George's Park. First match in nearly a year. It's going to be shown on the BBC, and the squad for the February camp is going to be announced on Tuesday. So that's tomorrow. For anyone listening live, podcast listeners, you know who's in it already. But England will also host Canada on the 13th of April with a venue at TBC. So a return to England's former assistant Bev Priestman, who's now head coach of Canada Women. Molly, I know that you were involved in this chat. So the news that Hege Riis is going to be part of Team GB's coaching squad at the Tokyo 2020 Olympics. The FA have said that she's a candidate for the yet-to-be-announced head coach role for Team GB as well.
Yeah, I think it's a logical move. I think at the moment there's been so much upheaval. There's been so many kind of managerial changes, people coming in, people coming out. Is the tournament going to go ahead? We still don't know. And I think it just makes sense to have that continuity with Hege. Obviously, the decision over who will be the permanent Team GB coach won't be made until after this camp. But I certainly think it makes sense for Hege and Rian Wilkinson, who are going to be part of this February camp, get to know the players, get involved, actually get onto the pitch, which I think is something that the players, the coaching staff, everyone in women's football has been so excited to see the women's national team actually on the pitch in albeit a friendly, a proper game. And I think to go from there, this is the building blocks in place, and Hege is the best in terms of providing the continuity in that respect.
Matt, Baroness Sue Campbell said that if she doesn't go as head coach, she's going to be assistant coach. Hege Riis, not Sue Campbell. What do you think of that? Is that the right move?
I don't know. I think there's plenty of British candidates that the FA could have chose, especially with bringing in a foreign coach for the England job. But the decision's been made now. You know, what does she know about English football at the moment? Has she been watching it? You know, I think they're the things that need to sort of will be answered, I guess, when we have the game against Northern Ireland. But it's just great to see that they've got some competitive fixtures. And I just hope that they get to play the Canada game, because obviously it's, you know, we're playing a team from, obviously, you know, North America that's going to have to come across to play. And with everything that's happened in the recent FIFA windows, because of COVID, they've not happened. So maybe it would be more sensible to pick either a European or, again, you know, an Ireland or Scotland or whatever to play these games if they were available.
Is it a job that you'd have liked to have been given on an interim basis?
Look, that wasn't about me. I mean, you've got people like Jane Ludlow, Shelley Kerr. You've got some really good people here, you know, that could have been appointed for them roles. But for whatever reason, we've gone down the foreign route again. I'd love to have been considered. Yeah, of course I would have done. It'd have been an honour. But I still think there's plenty of people in our country that have the experience to do that job.
Interesting. Very interesting times for the Lionesses coming up. You're listening to Women's Football Weekly on TalkSport 2. I'm Faye Carruthers, alongside Bristol City manager Matt Beard and Molly Hudson from The Times. Coming up, we're going to delve into a topsy-turvy weekend in the WSL.
On DAB+, online, via the TalkSport app and on your smart speaker. Women's Football Weekly on TalkSport 2, the home for women's football.
This is Women's Football Weekly on TalkSport 2, the only show on national radio dedicated to women's football. I'm Faye Carruthers. With me are Matt Beard, Bristol City manager, and Molly Hudson from The Times. Now, don't forget, if you do miss any of our shows, or if you want to listen again, our podcast is available on the TalkSport app, so you can download it today and go to our podcast section. Right now, it was quite the weekend of WSL action, was it not? Plenty of drama for us to get into.
Right with Iwabuchi, who will try one from distance. What a strike out of nothing. Aston Villa take the lead. It's been all Spurs, but Mana Iwabuchi, the Japanese international and World Cup winner, lighting up this game with a fabulous strike.
The delivery is a good one, and it is a second for Reading. Dan Carter puts the visitors in dreamland. And there it is, the final whistle. Manchester United lose a game at home in the league for the first time since January 2020.
We had enough chances created, didn't take them. We got one end, should score. They go down the other end, get a set piece, and we don't defend it well enough. Two set pieces cost us today. So bitterly disappointed. If you want to win titles, you've got to win games like that.
Goes the delivery, and it's gone all the way in. Carly Telford couldn't keep it out. And Brighton lead with 12 and a half minutes left. It's finished. Chelsea 1, Brighton have Albion 2.
I talk so much about the character in my dressing room. I talk so much about the resilience. Well, now we get a chance to see that, don't we? Because it's the response to the performances that coaches and players alike want to see.
Kelly. It's a great ball over! What a header that was from Hemp! Full time here. It is Arsenal 1, Manchester City 2.
Right, we will talk about that Arsenal-Manchester City game shortly because Molly Hudson was there. But let's start at the top because Chelsea, a shock defeat at King's Meadow, bringing their record of 33 games unbeaten to an end. Their first defeat for over 2 years. Absolutely crazy when you think of it, Matt Beard. It was a real shock, bearing in mind that your side beat Brighton last week.
What are you trying to say?
Nothing!
No, I'm joking. it was a massive, massive shock. It was a bit of a blow for us, to be honest with you. Because obviously Brighton were in and amongst that, and them 3 points take them further away. But no, obviously you could see with Emma's team selection, she had one eye on Wednesday, and they've had a really busy period. You know, same as us. You know, we play them now on the 14th as well. So that game going in's probably had a bearing on her team selection. But they'll be devastated with the way they conceded the second goal. You know. But it just goes to show, I think, obviously, look at all the results this weekend. you know, everyone that was in and around us have won, us and West Ham through. So it just dragged more teams into it now. You know, we got Tottenham Wednesday ourselves. So that's a massive, massive game now because they've been dragged into it with their last two defeats.
Yeah, we'll talk about your game in depth a little bit later. But as you say, it's so tight. Look, you're 2 points behind West Ham. They've got a game in hand. It's going to go down to the wire. And I think that's what I've loved more than anything about, in, you know, I'm sure it's not amazing for you to be physically involved in, Matt, but from a neutral's point of view, it's fascinating to watch because it's so tight at the top and the bottom that we have absolutely no idea at this stage of the season which way it's going to go. There's still a lot of football to play and a lot of points to play for. Molly, from a Chelsea point of view, and I don't just want to focus on Chelsea, by the way, I want to focus on the brilliance of Brighton as well. But Casey Stoney, Manchester United manager, mentioned, as you heard just then, that you can't win titles if you can't defend set pieces. Both these sides, Manchester United and Chelsea, undone by two set pieces, and that's probably what's going to disappoint Emma Hayes the most.
Yeah, and I think, as you've pointed out there, there were a lot of similarities in a way in the defeats, both for Chelsea and Manchester United, but both, you know, all the goals were set pieces. And it was also the fact that, you know, they had chances to win the game, both teams. They hit the woodwork, I think, a couple of times. And I think, yeah, as you say, that will be the frustration for the managers that, you know, set pieces are such a basic thing that no doubt is worked on so much in the week. But actually, it is a place where the smaller teams in the league can close the gap because it only takes a moment. And I also think, you know, it was a really difficult one for Carly Telford as well coming in. Obviously, Ann-Katrin Berger is normally Chelsea's number one goalkeeper and has been brilliant for Chelsea ever since she joined. Carly gets the game time, which I'm sure she'll be desperate for, and then will probably feel as though she could have done better, particularly with Brighton's second goal. So it was just a really frustrating day all round. But in a way, I really enjoyed it, certainly as a neutral, because I know a lot of the managers have been saying this season, you know, it's closer, the big teams are really struggling against the little teams. And actually, we haven't always seen that in the results, particularly Chelsea and Manchester United have pretty much come through unscathed. So in a way, it was like a real reality check for them and probably for everyone else that actually, yes, on your day, when a couple of things maybe go in your favour, you can absolutely get a result against anyone in the league.
And Brighton, as Matt alluded to, really needed that as well. Hope Powell said it set the tone for their season, or that's certainly what she wants it to do. They need to kick on there from that. But they have played more games than everybody else. They're on 14 at the moment. But fantastic goals from Aileen Whelan and Megan Connolly, Matt. And I know the repercussions it has for Bristol City, but you can't deny, you know, Brighton deserved that, really.
No, listen, it's a great result for Brighton. Especially, you know, the way they were playing, you know, they were poor against Man City. You know, they were poor against us. It's like anything, you know, you get moments like this that can really inspire them, and you know, they can really kick on off the back of this result now. But it's a great result for them. It's been a fascinating season. I think I put a tweet out saying it's probably the most exciting, like you just said. You know, if you look at Man City, you would never have thought they'd be in the position they're in with the amount of points that they dropped early on. So it just goes to show that on your day, anyone can beat anyone.
Yeah, and Arsenal play Chelsea on Wednesday. I know Molly's going to that one, and they find themselves 7 points outside the top three, which I'm sure Joe Montemurro is not happy with at all. There was another surprising defeat. We've mentioned it at Lee Village. Manchester United 0, Reading 2. United failing to capitalise on Chelsea dropping points. And it was a real shock defeat for them. They just didn't really find their rhythm in this game at all. And again, undone by two set pieces, Molly.
Yeah, and I think Reading had a really bright start in that one, and maybe that gave them a little bit of confidence. And sometimes you need that in these games against teams that, you know, are right up there at the top of the league. You need that sort of glimmer of hope early on to think, actually, yeah, we, you know, this isn't an impossible task. And I think, actually, you know, you mentioned there about Arsenal, but that race for the Champions League is now wide open again, because a bit like Brighton, Manchester United have played 14 games, which is more than their rivals. So yes, Arsenal look a very long way away, but they still have to play Man United. If Arsenal can win that game, suddenly it's really, really tight between Manchester United and Arsenal for that third position and obviously the really important Champions League spot. So just like the relegation battle, it's completely wide open, not just for the title, but for the three Champions League places.
Reading stay sixth, but they're now level on 18 points with fifth-placed Everton, who do have two games in hand. Kelly Chambers very happy. Two quick-fire goals, really, from captain Tash Harding with a header in from a corner and then Daniel Carter heading in from Emma Mitchell's free kick. And Reading offered so much promise at the beginning of the season. Did this feel, Matt, as if they were kind of a little bit back to their best?
I don't know. I think Man United could have been out of sight in the first half.
Yeah,
you know, Casey alluded to it, you know, the amount of chances they missed. You get a result like that against Man United and it will kick their season on now, you know, give them that confidence and that belief, a little bit like what we had with Brighton. You know, we then took that into the midweek game and Sunday. So, it will restart their season and... It's just such a surprising weekend. It's like the men's Premier League. It's so unpredictable at the moment. It's great to see.
I love it. I love football. Ella Toon and Leah Galton had chances, but you have to give credit to Grace Maloney in the Reading goal because she was absolutely superb and kept them in it. So that leaves United level on points with Chelsea, who have a game in hand. Next up for Casey Stoney's side is a Manchester derby on Friday, and we're going to be chatting about that to City's Chloe Kelly next to see if she thinks they're back in the title race. This is Women's Football Weekly on TalkSport 2. You are listening to Women's Football Weekly on TalkSport 2, the UK's only national radio show dedicated to women's football. I'm Faye Carruthers and I'm alongside Bristol City's Matt Beard and Molly Hudson from The Times. Now then, Arsenal 1, Manchester City 2 was the other result which kind of put the title race and the Champions League spots, as Molly was just saying, right back up in the air. And probably the most spectacular part of this game was Ellen White's fantastic half volley opening up the scoring on 24 minutes. That makes her now the WSL's all-time record goal scorer, overtaking Vivian Miedema. She's got 55 goals and she's just a delight to watch when she's in this kind of form, isn't she, Matt Beard?
Yeah, she's world class. It was a great, great finish. I'm pleased for her. And I think Man City, well, Gareth Taylor's done a great job. I think took him a little while to get adjusted to the WSL, but I think he's finding his feet now. Man City looking formidable.
Yeah, they're looking impressive. Molly, you were at this game. What was your assessment of it from an Arsenal point of view?
I think obviously you have to take into context as much as Joe Montemurro didn't want to make excuses. The fact that they had only played once in 7 weeks clearly played a part. I actually thought Arsenal were quite good. They were never really out of the game. I think it was a pretty good even game to watch, actually. And I think what Manchester City did so well was focus on Arsenal's defence. And we know that Arsenal under Montemurro like to play out from the back and like the defenders to have a lot of possession midway through the second half. Gareth Taylor moved to a 4-4-2 and put kind of a lot more pressure on the centre halves and tried to stop that outlet. Arsenal were always dangerous on the counter and particularly when they could press. It's just that it felt as though their positives, the pressing and their forward players, they probably didn't have the legs to do it for as long as they would have liked. Obviously, they got one goal from that outlet, but it just felt like they ran out of steam a little bit at the end. And certainly, as Matt was saying, Gareth Taylor's done such a good job in recent weeks, and you could really see that confidence from the players that even when Arsenal equalised, it was kind of never in doubt that eventually City would find a winner.
Yeah, two assists for Chloe Kelly as well. We're going to hear from her very shortly. She's now got 8 for the season. What an acquisition she was. But Matt, I want to talk to you about Joe Montemurro saying in the past that there was a review of Arsenal's training processes happening, but there still seems to be some real issues with workload and conditioning, as Molly kind of mentioned there. They were without several key players because of injuries sustained in training, including Jordan Nobbs, Kim Little, and Jem Beattie.
City. Have you noticed anything different or heard anything about, you know, what they might be having to do to try and improve their situation?
No, nothing. I think it all comes down to the size of the... I think if you have a small squad, you know, you look at West Ham, you know, they're naming players on the bench at the moment that aren't even fit to play because their squads are small. It purely comes down to that because you can't rest and players when players need resting, or you can't pick and choose, you know, for certain games. Like, look at Emma Hayes, for example, backfired on her this weekend. It does come down to the size of the squad, and especially in the times that we're in at the moment. If one player gets COVID, you know, like when I first come here, we went to Everton with three missing. You know, some other players may have to isolate. You need the depth of your squads, and I think it's going to be their Achilles heel this year. I don't think they'll get in the top three purely and simply because of the depth of their squad.
And the interesting thing is he likes to have a small squad because he thinks that they gel better. But clearly you can't be fighting for Champions League football now in the WSL today with that small squad. Let's hear from Joe Montemurro, shall we? He said after the game that he's not counted his side out of the Champions League spots, but he has acknowledged things are out of his hands now.
The situation is what it is. I can't change the fixturing. I can't change who we play, when we play, when a game's called off or not. So we can only control the controllables, and that's for us to be as competitive and play our brand of football week in, week out. I can't worry about what's going to happen. I think there's about 10 games left still. So there's 30 points still available. There's a lot of points still available. And just seeing on today's results, there might be a few things that could happen before May.
Interesting stuff from Joe Montemurro, the Arsenal manager there. We also caught up with player of the match, Chloe Kelly, earlier on today to chat about that result and Friday's Manchester derby.
I'm working hard on the training pitch and finding a good balance between getting goals and assists, and really working hard with the girls at City to get that relationship, building relationships and knowing what each other need. And I feel like we're really starting to gel now as a team, and that's what's paying off at the minute. Working hard on the training pitch and going into games, we're really confident and we believe in our ability. But yeah, I feel like I've got a good relationship with Ellen, and as a front three at the minute, we're doing well, and that just comes off the training pitch really, and shows in matches that we're really starting to click now.
And yesterday's win, obviously massive, not just for City, but given everything that happened elsewhere, kind of had quite a big impact on the whole league, that result yesterday. Are you feeling like City can really go on and potentially, you know, win the title?
Yeah, definitely. It was a great moment for us to get that win and other teams dropping points, but we need to focus on ourselves and taking each game as it comes. Of course, we really want to be in there for the title race, and I feel like we're right up there now, but we'll focus on ourselves.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Finding your perfect home was hard, but thanks to Burrow, furnishing it has never been easier. Burrow's easy-to-assemble modular sofas and sectionals are made from premium, durable materials, including stain and scratch-resistant fabrics. So they're not just comfortable and stylish, they're built to last. Plus, every single Burrow order ships free right to your door. Right now, get 15% off your first order at burrow.com/ACAST. That's 15% off at burrow.com/ACAST.
and taking each game as it comes. But another big game on Friday, and one that we'll really focus on ourselves, but also see where we can break them down too. So it'll be a huge game on Friday for the title race.
And obviously, yeah, huge game on Friday. 2-2 last time played United, and you played a big part in that game. How are you feeling about Friday? Are you nervous? Are you excited? What's the feeling in the squad as well?
No, I don't feel like we're nervous. I feel like it's a great opportunity to go out and show what we're capable of again. And we obviously have frustrations in the 2-2 draw at their place, but we want to right our wrongs from that game, and we were in full control in that, and we let it slip, and we know where we went wrong and where we can be better. So that's massive for us going into this game, and we'll really focus on what we can do to break them down. But no, I don't feel like it's nerves. It's just another game to show what we're capable of as a team, and we're in a good moment at the minute, so we'll keep striving to be better.
And is there anyone that you think in the group this season that is someone you think maybe hasn't been getting enough love and enough credit? Because obviously yourself and you know, Ellen's goal yesterday have been getting a lot of attention from press and in, you know, on clips and on radio. Is there anyone that you think is kind of the unsung hero of the City group? I don't know if it's a trainer, a member of coaching staff or a player. Is there someone that you would like to sort of shout out, I guess?
I just think as a group, we've really stuck together in the tough moments. And of course, Ellen White reaching, becoming the highest goal scorer in the WSL is a huge achievement. And yeah, definitely she don't get as much credit as she deserves. She's an unbelievable player and someone I really look up to, and with her mentality and a great player in person. But I feel like as a group, we've just really stuck together in tough moments of the season when maybe we have dropped points, but those moments are probably the ones that win and lose you the season, whether you break in them moments and or stick together. And we've definitely stuck together in those tough moments, and it shows a lot about each and every one of our characters. But we'll keep working hard, and yeah, there's definitely no individuals in this group. We're a tight team, and we want to push on to be better.
Manchester City's Chloe Kelly there chatting to TalkSport's Flo Lloyd-Hughes. Really interesting to hear from her. And yes, it is going to be an absolute cracker, I'm sure. Friday, 7 p.m, the Manchester Derby. Right, you're listening to Women's Football Weekly on TalkSport 2 with Faye Carruthers, Bristol City manager Matt Beard and Molly Hudson from The Times. Next, we're going to round up the rest of the FAWSL and the Championship and bring you up to date with all the latest news. You're listening to Women's Football Weekly on TalkSport 2. I'm Faye Carruthers, and keeping you company with me is Matt Beard, Bristol City manager, and Molly Hudson from The Times. And we're going to focus on Matt Beard now because he went back to his former club at West Ham at the weekend. It was a 1-1 draw with his new side, Bristol City. First of all, Matt, what was it like going back?
That was a bit surreal because it was obviously so soon after. You know, it's good to catch up with people. I didn't really get to see many of the players because, look, I had a job, they had a job. Caught up some of the staff, but now from my perspective, I was really pleased with our performance yesterday. We should have won it, really. We're desperately disappointed we didn't come away with 3 points.
Yeah, I mean, Ebony Salmon nearly taking the lead, hit the post. That's the kind of way it goes sometimes, isn't it, when your luck's not quite in. But Sophie Bagley, absolutely fantastic in goal.
Yeah, she's been brilliant. Made a great save on the free kick. Made a couple of decent saves as well. And it was the same Wednesday night. But no, she's a fantastic keeper. And I'm sure she keeps performing like that. She'll have a chance of potentially getting an England call up.
Yeah, so it's made it really tight at the bottom now, which is what you wanted. But other results didn't go your way. Aston Villa winning 1-0 over Tottenham. Mana Iwabuchi, I bet you're wishing that they hadn't bought her. First half stunner, enough for Villa to claim a first home win of the season. And they do get a little bit of breathing space, Matt, with that as well. They're now 4 points clear of you with the game in hand.
Yes, I think both... top and bottom are going to go to the wire. Once Aston Villa appointed Marcus Bignot, you know, they'll be fine. With the investment they've made in the team, I think they'll be fine. I felt it would be between us, West Ham, Brighton, potentially Birmingham, but Tottenham have now been dragged back into it with two defeats on the spin. So whatever goes on, it's going to go right to the wire for both ends of the table.
It is literally split in half, isn't it, this season? It's absolutely insane. What are your feelings, Molly? I mean, disappointing for Rhian Skinner, two defeats on the bounce after a really good start to her tenure at Spurs.
Yeah, I think it's a little bit like Matt was saying. A lot of teams are kind of getting dragged back into it, and it feels as though, you know, when Skinner came in, you would argue Tottenham were right down there. Then she had those wins on the bounce, and you were like, right, they're out, they're going to be safe. And then a couple of defeats, and we're sat here again going, are they quite safe? But I think, you know, I have to say, Mane Iwobuchi, for me, is maybe the signing of the season, just for the calibre of player that she is and the situation that Aston Villa are in. I think she's just a fantastic signing, and I know there are a couple of other teams in the league interested in her as well, which makes that acquisition all the more impressive, really. But I think, yeah, I think it might go right to the end, and I think particularly West Ham, it's a pretty tough job for Ollie Harder to come in and obviously be straight into a relegation battle, really, to kind of get used to the league and everything. It's very much kind of up and running, here you are. So I think that'll be difficult. And I think it's such small margins, you know, as Matt says, I think Bristol hit the post and hit the bar yesterday, and tiny margins like that kind of might be really important at the end of the season.
Really important for Everton as well, because Jamie Lee Napier's equaliser for Birmingham looks like it's ended Everton's chances of a top four finish. A decent point for Everton. They've actually only played Birmingham. They've actually only played 11 games this season, so have three in hand over Brighton and Reading, for example. It was Birmingham's first goal in 432 minutes, which just shows the kind of form that they've been in. Daniel Turner with the goal, a lovely free kick, giving Everton the lead. Right, so you're up to date with the FAWSL. Let's check in. Oh, by the way, loads of midweek fixtures, which we've mentioned some of. So Brighton host West Ham, Chelsea Arsenal, which Molly will be at, Birmingham Villa, lovely little West Midlands derby, Tottenham Bristol City, and then Manchester City against Manchester United, the big Manchester derby on Friday night. Now then, the Championship is also pretty intense, because Leicester City and Durham level on points on 32, Leicester with a game in hand. Big shout out to big Women's Football Weekly fan Derek Purcell, who messages us every week and is a huge Durham fan. And unfortunately, no football for him this weekend. The London City Lionesses game against Durham was postponed. Blackburn drew 2-2 with Crystal Palace. Charlton 2-2 with Liverpool. Coventry lost 1-0 to Lewis. And Sheffield United were 4-2 winners away to London Bees. And all you Championship fans out there, we are going to be doing a special Championship episode for you next Monday. So stay tuned for that. Little bit of Championship news this week for you as well. London Bees have signed Wales and Watford player Helen Ward on a temporary contract that allows her to continue playing. She considered retirement, as we told you before. She's been on this show after non-elite football was suspended at the start of the year, but she's going to be returning to Watford once the National League resumes. And Liverpool and England forward Rinsola Babajidi handed in a request to leave Liverpool. She wanted to leave during the January transfer window. A move, though, was denied. Understood several loan moves put to Liverpool. She does have a year left on her contract, which she only signed in June, and she wasn't in the squad for yesterday's match. Interesting times at Liverpool, which we'll discuss in length, no doubt, next week on our Championship special. And I just want to end on some international news with Lauren Dykes announcing her retirement today. The Wales Centurion has decided she's going to leave professional football after 13 years. Defender won 105 caps, 3 goals, awarded an MBE in 2019 for services to women's football in Wales. And she said it's been in the pipeline for a while now, and she wants to continue her progression in coaching. And I understand she's an assistant coach at Bristol City, Matt, under you. How much of a future has she got in coaching, and what's she like to work with, and what was she like as a player?
I'll start with the last question. As a player, she was excellent.
Yeah, I gave you three there, sorry.
Yeah, I know. I might not remember the other two. No, I'm joking. No, she as a player, she was fantastic. I've been trying to talk her out of it. we was having a bit of laugh and joke on the bus on the way back yesterday. No, she was a fantastic player. Obviously, to play for Wales over 100 times and obviously get a recognition for that as well with the NBA is fantastic. She's a great coach already. She has such a great manner about her, the way she talks to the players individually. She's going to be, I would have hoped she would be in the next Wales setup with whatever goes on, because she's got a great future ahead of her.
Yeah, and amazing to watch as a player, Molly.
Definitely. And I think it's players like Lauren that have had such a long career and have kind of paved the way for a lot of girls coming through. Certainly in Wales, she's a huge role model for the younger players there. And I think it's so exciting to see that she will be staying in the game, that she's going to go into coaching. And that's exactly the kind of infrastructure and framework, people like Lauren, that you want in and around the club and as Matt said, potentially the country as well.
Yeah, very good luck, Lauren Dykes, in your future career. We'll hopefully get to chat to you here on Women's Football Weekly at some point soon. But thank you, Matt, and thank you, Molly. We've come to an end. Lovely to talk to you both.
Thank you.
Take care. Next week, as I said, we're going to have a championship episode. Thanks to Matt Beard, Molly Hudson, Chloe Kelly, and to all of you, as ever, for listening today. Don't forget, if you miss any of our show or you want to listen back to any of our specials from last year, you can download the Women's Football Weekly podcast via the TalkSport app.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win, and support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. Invesco QQQ is proud to sponsor this episode and even prouder to provide access to innovation for the last 25 years. Basketball has had innovations over the years too. We're seeing the game played in new ways every day. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.